Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Joe Beninati. You're listening to NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off podcast. Here he is. Here's your host, J.J. Regan.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome into another edition of NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face-Off Podcast. I am your host, the Capitals correspondent, J.J. Regan. With me today, he is the Capitals insider. He is the pinky to my brain. He's Tarik El-Bashir. Tarik?
I have a vague recollection of these cartoon characters. Brain was like a mouse with a big head.
Yes.
Now, who was Pinky?
Pinky was his
kind of his lackey?
His dim-witted sidekick.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so apt.
But what was the show?
The Brain was always trying to take over the world despite being a mouse.
That's right.
And all of his plans always went awry despite the fact that he was a genius.
I recall that.
So it's very apt. The genius who everything always goes wrong all the time for. The dim-witted sidekick.
That was terrible.
Mailbag pod, meaning you, the listener.
Hey, everyone.
Get inside today's topics. We are so close to the playoffs.
Let me go back for a second. Okay. So you picked a genius who has everything blow up in his face all the time?
Yes.
Then that's you?
Yeah.
All right, carry on.
Oh, it is the mailbag pod. Today, you guys want to know about the playoffs. We have a bunch of questions. We are going to start with Jet Mailer, who writes, "I'm a big fan of the podcast, and I enjoy hearing your takes on the team." Thank you, Jet.
Jet? I like that.
You like Jet? It says Jet.
It's an awesome name.
Going into the playoffs, I think Evgeny Kuznetsov is the key to success. Am I wrong thinking that he must be a dominant player for the team to make a deep postseason run?
I think you're 100% correct, Jet. You're not wrong at all. When you look at the way things work in the playoffs, especially against a team like Columbus, they're going to put all of their eggs in one basket in terms of shutting down most likely a line. And there's a two-headed monster in Washington right now with Nicholas Backstrom also playing well. So if Kuzi is on his game and they want to throw Werenski and Jones out there every other shift to match up against him, that's going to free up Oshie and Backstrom and Burakovsky. And look, when Kuzi is providing that first line production, that means your second line center is Nicholas Backstrom. I mean, think about that as a 1-2 punch in the playoffs. And Kuzi has been productive. He's had a whale of a last month of the regular season. It's exactly how you wanted him to go into the playoffs. So you're not wrong. I would say he certainly is one of the big keys.
I think one of the big keys of playoff success for the Capitals is being able to have Ovechkin and Backstrom on two different lines. The reason being, Backstrom's so important in his shutdown role, and it's so hard to have him do that when he's on the line with Alex Ovechkin. So Evgeny Kuznetsov is critical. If he can be that top line center, then you can have Backstrom on the second line, and you can use him in whatever way you need to. If he needs to be the shutdown guy,
also,
he can be.
Also, when Kuzi's on his game, what's the power play doing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a big part of that now, too, as well. Thank you for your question, Jet, and for your cool name. Next up, Greg Christian.
What's up, Greg?
He writes, "Tarik and JJ, my theory on champions is that everybody wants to win, but it's having the mindset that they'd rather die than lose that sets champions apart. I've never seen that kind of determination from the Caps, but I don't get to see them in the dressing room like you guys do.
How committed do you think they are individually and collectively to doing everything in their power to win? Greg, given their history, it's a fair question to ask. We can't sit here and say that that's totally unfair and you're out of bounds for asking it. It's fair to ask at this point. Having said that, I think this is one of the most overrated theories. I've heard it from other people as well. I think to think that they're not committed to winning, I think, is crazy.
I know where you're coming from, and there are – when you look at teams that kind of overachieve, it's because they give that second effort, because they make those second effort plays, because they just simply refuse to allow the other team to push them around. But I'm kind of on the same page with you, JJ. These guys are all highly driven, professional, well-played, you know, hockey players. I mean, there's 700 and some odd of them in the entire world.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if, you know, Nashville, you know, has more of those guys, and that's why they're the favorites. I think it comes down to having better players and having a coach that can put those better players in a better position to succeed. Again, you can't have a bunch of snowflakes on your team either. I mean, you want some guys with a lot of pushback, but when I look at this team, I see guys with pushback.
Yeah.
I see guys with bite. I see guys that, you know, don't want to lose, and it changes their mood when the team is losing or isn't playing well. So I wouldn't necessarily worry about that, Greg. I mean, my biggest questions going into this postseason run are X's and O's related and specifically goaltending related.
Yeah, the want, the desire is there for sure.
There's enough want to on this team.
It's hard to be a professional athlete and not have that. I think that's something that sets professional athletes apart from normal people is just how competitive they are. So I wouldn't worry about that. But it's a fair question to ask, and we thank you for asking it. We're going to answer more of your questions right after a word from our sponsor. Welcome back. Tarek Stevie writes in with two questions. He writes, "Hey, guys, love the pod. On the last day of the season, the Caps could have played three different teams. The reaction from a lot of analysts was that Columbus was the worst matchup. Why? Don't the Caps always play well against them?"
I mean, in my feeling, is that Columbus was also the worst. And I haven't heard who else agreed, but just from what I've seen this year. And yes, you're right. The Capitals have historically played very well against Columbus. This season, they went 3-1 against Columbus. I saw a young New Jersey team that was ripe for the picking. I saw a Philadelphia team that had huge question marks in goal, huge question marks in specialty teams, and just holes in their lineup. And when I look at Columbus, I see some things that worry me. And I see a team that plays like a team, that there isn't that we shut that guy down, we're good. Where, you know, they have four lines that are dangerous. They got a goaltender in Sergei Bobrovsky that when he wants to be the world's best goaltender can be. Now, we know his numbers against Washington are terrible. And they've also got a great head coach in John Tortorella, who is a master motivator and a master tactician and is a specialist at getting under everyone's skin. So I saw more concerning, more red flags when it came to Columbus than with the other two potential opponents.
Despite that, if I recall from our last podcast, you still picked the Philadelphia Flyers to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I did.
Okay. And I still think you're wrong.
I just think the Penguins are a team that has played so much hockey. It has to catch up to them at some point.
It will at some point, but it's not going to be against Philadelphia's four goalies.
Maybe they play them all at the same time.
Yeah, I'll say one. Or Claude Giroux just skating by himself with four guys standing in the net. Maybe. Stevie's second question. The playoffs are always crazy unpredictable. What are the biggest differences between the regular season and the playoffs that account for that?
I would say the intensity with which the games are played. You know, you have to play well in the regular season in order to get an invitation to the dance, to be one of the 16 teams that is fortunate enough to get in. But once you're in, that level gets cranked from about a 7 to about a 10. And the reason is you can't win the Stanley Cup in March or in February or in January, but you can win it in June, and you have to start with that first round to keep advancing. And the level of play, it just goes to another dimension in terms of how hard the games are played, the sacrifices that are made. You know, Stevie, do yourself a favor and watch the Columbus Blue Jackets and how they approach blocking shots. They block shots all year long. It's the hallmark of a Tortorella coach team. But watch in the playoffs. Guys aren't getting struck by shots. They're actually layering and putting their bodies in harm's way to block shots with their thighs, with their knees, with their shins, with their shoulders, whatever it takes to keep those pucks from getting through to the net. There is no flamingo going on here. No one's lifting their one leg to let that shot go through. And it's the second effort plays too. Just, you know, watch, you know, a forward on the Capitals who, you know, doesn't necessarily play a hard physical game like Andre Burakovsky or maybe a Jacob Varana, and watch them on the forecheck in the playoffs. You know, in the regular season, D-Man has the puck along the boards right before he moves it. And he gets moved right when Varana or Burakovsky. I don't want to pick on those two players, but you know, one of the lesser weight kind of players come in. They'll just peel off in the regular season. In the playoffs, you put your body on them, and you do it over and over because you know that the cumulative effect in that series of hitting that defenseman over and over, he's not gonna want to go retrieve that puck, and eventually it's gonna wear him down. And those are the kinds of things that you see in the playoffs that just change that level of commitment and intensity, and that's what makes it such a great tournament. That's why even casual fans start turning on hockey once you get into the playoffs and the sudden death overtime. I mean,
right?
That's also the coolest thing.
The game is elevated. There's nothing like playoff hockey. You can watch playoff hockey, and it is incredible to watch. There, I don't think that was, with the exception of the Guy Boucher Tampa Bay Lightning, I don't think there's ever been a bad playoff to watch. It's always the best hockey is great to watch. And I think what really changes things is the series. The series really impacts the strategy of a game. It impacts how a coach approaches things. It impacts how a player approaches things. You know, a lot of coaches, they may not worry about matchups in the regular season. They may not worry as much about getting your top line, your top pairings against the other team's top offensive lines. Those things matter in the playoffs. There's no stone that's left unturned. The coaches will do everything they can to get the right matchups.
That's really a point. I mean, how many times have we heard Barry Trotz go, I was just rolling four lines tonight. I wasn't matching.
That changes.
Not in the playoffs.
No, that changes
not
in the playoffs. That changes. You have to get the right matchups. And if those matchups don't work out, then those lines change. It is a completely different series. It's a completely different game. And that's what makes it incredibly awesome to watch. Thank you, Stevie, for your questions. Moving on to Dan. Dan writes, why does the goalie play the puck behind and away from the net? It seems like a huge liability.
Whoa.
A lot of the time, they don't even move. They just stop it behind the net with their stick. Tarek, why do goalies go around and try to get the puck behind the net?
Because it expedites getting the puck out of your own end. It's like having a third defenseman. A lot of times, when that goaltender goes and he stops the puck behind the net and he sets it up for a defenseman who's now swooping in to get it, so now that defenseman is coming around, the goaltender stops the puck, leaves it right there on the side of the net. When that defenseman picks it up, he's at 18 miles an hour already.
Yep.
So by the time he makes three or four strides and crosses over a couple times, he's already at the faceoff circle. Now he's reading the play. So now the forechecker who's coming in has to slam on the brakes, stop, and start going backwards again. Because now you're facing a defenseman who's almost at full speed with that puck, and you're coming in. You got to make an adjustment as a forechecker, and now he's already read the ice. He's coming around the net with the puck. And we're talking about a play where a goalie just stops the puck and leaves it for a D-man. He comes around. He's now looking at his wing, who's at the hash marks most likely, butt against the boards. He's looking at his center, who's, you know, made his little J-turn right, and now has a stick on the ice going, hey, I'm open here. He's got the other winger. He's got his other D-man. It's all happening faster now rather than, let's say, that puck getting dumped in, and now it's going around the boards, and the forechecker might have a chance to go get it.
Yep.
So what that goaltender did was he cut it off. So when a team dumps the puck in, the point of dump and chase is you chase after you dump. If the goaltender interrupts that dump and chase, it is now a dump that the goaltender got, and now he's leaving it for the D-man. Now, the other thing is if you have a goaltender like a Holtby who's got great hands and great stick ability, he'll come, he'll stop that puck, he'll make a pass.
He'll start the breakout.
Yeah. It's one – it's it, it, it basically – it's short – cutting everything. So now if Holtby has the puck on his stick and he's 6 feet away from the net, now instead of Michael Kempney or John Carlson having to come all the way back to retrieve the puck, he's now where the winger is at the hash marks. The winger is now cutting through the neutral zone with speed. So everything just happens. Everything just goes a little quicker there. Holtby feeds it to the D-man. The D-man is already halfway up in the zone. He now hits the winger in the neutral zone who's cutting through with speed. Everything just happened a whole lot faster. I'll tell you, man, having a goaltender like a Holtby who's really, really good with his stick, it's like having a third defenseman back there. It really is. Instead of having, five skaters, you got a goalie who acts as, like 0.5 of a skater in terms of activating that breakout.
If your defenseman is the first guy back, then as a goalie, when you stop the puck, he's the guy who's going to get it. Whereas if it goes around the boards, there's no guarantee that your guy is the guy who's going to get it. So that helps you with the breakout there. And if the opposing team is the first guy back there, then by you getting the puck, you cut off their chances. He may get that puck and he may be able to set up for an offensive chance, and you have interrupted that process. So that would be why. Hope that answers your question. We got a couple more questions left, which we will answer right after a word from our sponsor. All right, Tarek, a few more questions left. Eddie starts us off. He writes, "My question is way in the future. Some have mentioned draft picks for a rebuild process, but should Capitals take the Vegas formula and instead of draft picks, pick up a strong core of players like the Golden Knights did and build them up? Seems to me Vegas broke the league of how to do a rebuild specifically if they go deep into the playoffs." So, Tarek, do you think Vegas has changed the way teams will approach rebuilding going forward?
No. I just think that Vegas was the beneficiary of league expansion draft rules that were set up to help them get better faster. I mean, think about it. Vegas got the ninth best player on everyone's roster, if not better, because they were making deals on the side to stay away from this guy and take that guy. And you look at the number of draft picks they still have.
I know.
This team is going to be really good for a long time right off the bat. So I don't think that they broke the league or broke the mold in how teams are going to be rebuilt, because teams aren't going to be able to go pluck the ninth best player off everyone's roster. I think there are a lot of general managers, I know this from talking to them, general managers and coaches around the league that are seriously like annoyed by these rules. I mean, they feel like, especially like a guy like Barry Trotz, who had Mike Dunham as his starting goaltender, Nashville, right. when he was starting that program from scratch. And you look at Gerard Gallant, he's got Marc-Andre Fleury. He's got a first overall draft pick.
I know.
Stanley Cup winner as his number one goalie. I mean, the difference is just I even hesitate sometimes to call them an expansion team. It's like it's like being born at like 14 years old with a trust fund. I mean, it's like they got past all of the awkward and painful parts of kind of coming up, and then arrived with like three second lines and a third line, two number two pairs and a third pair, and a number one goaltender.
Vegas was working with some circumstances that teams won't be able to recreate on their own. First of all, every team was obligated to give someone to Vegas. Vegas was going to get somebody from everyone. What Vegas did that was so smart was they said, "Hey, everyone, we're willing to talk to you about anybody." That was the difference there. And I think they benefited from a lot of teams overreacting to, "Oh my gosh, we could lose this guy. We can't lose that guy." And so William Karlsson, the leading scorer of Vegas, Columbus traded him to Vegas so that they would take somebody else. He was traded to Vegas because Columbus wanted to protect somebody else. Jonathan Marchessault, that Florida left exposed for some reason.
Bad move.
The thing that this stinks for is for Seattle, because people are going to expect the same sort of success from Seattle.
Well, but they're going to get the same.
They're going to get the same rules, but teams are going to be a lot more, hey, we're going to lose somebody, so I'm not going to give up a draft pick as well just so I can lose somebody just as good or potentially better than the guy I was going to lose anyway.
It's going to raise the stakes a little bit, but those guys paid $650 million for that franchise. I wouldn't be surprised.
And they're not going to be as good?
I wouldn't be surprised if Gary Bettman actually sweetens their pot a little.
Oh, really?
Bit.
You think so?
I don't think he's going to give them more advantages. But remember, Vegas cost $500. Seattle cost $650.
Well,
$650.
He may need to, because you know what else is going to happen? Hmm. People are going to stop giving no movement clauses in contracts, because that affected teams a lot.
I have a no movement clause. Do you?
I could go to Hershey tomorrow. But I think that handcuffed teams a lot, where guys who they maybe wouldn't mind losing, and all of a sudden they were sort of handcuffed with it, like Ottawa with Dion Phaneuf.
You make a good point. I mean, I think that while Vegas might have laid the blueprint for Seattle, I think the mistakes made by other teams are also going to be studied. I think teams are going to be more prepared for how to deal with an expansion draft and are probably going to avoid being fleeced, as some teams did.
Our last question of the day comes from Marie Smith, who writes,
Marie, what's up?
I wanted to switch things up a bit. This is pretty premature, but now that the first year of the Adidas jersey deal is coming to a close, what would you like to see on a potential Caps alternate jersey? I didn't really like the giant red cummerbund on the Winter Classic jerseys. I think she means the Stadium Series.
I like those jerseys.
So I'm hoping they come up with something new and fresh.
They will.
I really like the Winter Classic, Series jerseys. Those were great. I will say this. When Ovechkin first modeled it, that stripe was big.
It seemed to get smaller and smaller.
But I ultimately like the finished product. That's not going to be what
it is
going forward.
I actually framed one of those jerseys. It's on the wall of my office at home. I have six jerseys on my wall, and that's one of them. It's not even autographed. I just thought it was so cool looking. I got a frame for it, and I just think it's beautiful. But that's not going to be their alternate jersey.
No, I don't think so.
If I had to guess, and I don't know this for sure, but I think some teams are going to start introducing alternates next year. I would imagine the Capitals are going to have one of their throwback jerseys. I know everyone loves that red jersey, the red throwback.
It's the best one.
It's the best one. And, JJ, you're not the only person that feels that way. If I had to guess, it's going to be that jersey or maybe the white one. But everyone loves that old school look with the stars and the hockey stick for the team. I mean, it's going to be that ilk. It's going to be something like that.
Yeah.
I bet we're going to find out here probably over the summer, maybe sometime in the when there's not a playoff game every night and things start slowing down. I think they're going to probably look for an opportunity to make some noise there. I bet most teams are going to have an alternate next year.
If I had to guess, I think they would go back with the throwback red. I mean, every time, except for this recent Stadium Series jersey, pretty much every time they have a chance to release a new jersey, it's a throwback in some way. Even the Winter Classic maroon one was based on historical teams that were in the Washington area.
So, look, sorry to catch up. Most people loved that outdoor game jersey. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say, hey, why can't we introduce blue, make that be – the problem is your slogan is rock the red. You're identified by red. There's too much marketing tied up in red to now go, well, we're mostly red. Right. Sometimes we're blue. On Friday nights, we're blue. But it's just there's too much going on there. It's going to be some variation of a red jersey. Yeah, I can almost guarantee that.
If you want to know why they wouldn't introduce more blue – watch games one and two of the playoffs against the Blue Jackets instead of just being all red, there's going to be a few blue spots in there from people wearing the Stadium Series jersey, and that's fine, but it's not going to be the blanket of red we've
never
seen in the last few years.
But yeah, it's another good point.
So I would expect red. I know everyone loves the Weagle and wants that to be a jersey. I'm not sure we'll ever see that, but who knows? Never say never. But thank you all for your questions. We cannot do these mailbag podcasts without you. If you want to have your questions read and answered on the next podcast, you can send it in to capitalsfaceoff@gmail.com. If you sent your question in but did not hear us answer, don't worry. we can't always get to all of the questions, and sometimes we get questions after we record the podcast, but before we publish. So if we did not answer your question this week, then we will get to it on the next Mailbag podcast. If you like the podcast, you can subscribe anywhere podcasts are available, and be sure to give us a good rating and review. Those things really do matter to help spread the word about the show. Tark, the playoffs are upon us. There's no more waiting. It is now time for the playoffs. I cannot be more excited. Caps versus Columbus. It's the first time ever. I'm so excited.
Bring it.
It's going to be awesome. Bring it on. For Tark Al-Bashir, this is JJ Regan. Now let's get the puck out of here.